Hey everyone, nearly a year separates this from the last Think About Now episode. And man, what a year it's been. But rather than, you know, just go into why it took me to jump back into podcasting for so long or why I took such an extended break, I'd kind of rather just jump into what inspired me to jump back into it, which has a lot to do with a lot of the reading that I've been doing lately, doing a lot of listening. And what I'm hearing right now is really a discussion of values. That's the bare bones of the majority of the conversations that people are having right now, and the chaotic disputes that are ensuing in political discussions. It's at the heart of the debate is one of values. And on most sides, people believe that their values are more than just subjective, but rather innate, intrinsic, essential, and absolute. And that anyone who opposes those values is wicked. The most honest way to start this discussion, the way I like starting any conversation, is always to admit where you're at fault of your own points, right? And it's a discussion of my own viewpoints, which are propagated throughout the years. You know, a life without examination is a life without living, right? And what is life but a series of stories seen through different lenses over the course of time, where we can look back and judge the times where we got it right and the times where we didn't get it right at all. For years, I've stated that the human condition necessarily wants liberty, that people want to be free to live lives with the respect for private property, that they are intrinsically good and peaceful, that most people are born anarchists, and that through propaganda and mistreatment, they're led to believe that they need to be controlled through force. My thesis, my thoughts on this come from the people like, you know, Lloyd DeMau, Dr. Bruce Perry, Ayn Rand, Dr. Nathaniel Brandon, and, you know, Stefan Molyneux. This frame of thinking essentially goes as follows. Man is born with certain intrinsic motivators and values, and propagandists convince them to go against those values for their own greedy wants and needs. Essentially, people have been brainwashed to believe that they want to be controlled. We start as wolves and become sheep through manipulation. What's interesting is that Marxists and primitivists, I've found, have a very similar take, believing that capitalistic materialism is merely a result of calculated brainwashing by the ruling capitalist class. Meaning the reason that you want stuff is not because you really want it, but that the perverse ruling class and culture has convinced you that you need it. The reason you want nice food and a nice house and tons of clothes is because you've been brainwashed. And in all these cases, if someone believes something that is antithetical to your primary values, your primary beliefs, it's brainwashing. If someone believes something that you believe, that's enlightenment. It's very much on the red pill, blue pill thought process that took over after the Matrix movie, right? There is an essentialist claim being made about all of humanity in these cases. Now, what do I mean by essentialist? The doctrine that essence is prior to existence. What the hell does that mean? Well, an essentialist claim would be the view that categories of people, such as women and men, or say heterosexuals and homosexuals, or members of specific ethnic groups, have intrinsically different and characteristic natures or dispositions that are absolute. So an essentialist claim would be, for instance, right, the former belief that black people were by their very nature subservient and therefore needed to be enslaved. People believed that it was a moral good to help these poor, weak-minded people through enslavement. And if these black folks decided to flee their own captivity, well, they were suffering from a mental illness known as drapetomania, which was an actual term created by American physician Samuel Cartwright. So in both these cases, there were essentialist and absolutist claims that are being made about black people, that they are subservient by their nature, that those who were not were mentally ill. That may seem far-fetched now, but it's not out of line in popular thinking in regards to child rearing. There are many people who make essentialist claims regarding the nature of children, that they need to be violently disciplined in order to ensure their subservience, and they define opposition to schoolwork as a mental disease. So what are the essentialist claims that myself and others are making when we state that people are born free and are simply taught to be enslaved? Well, thinking goes like this. Our belief of what human nature is, what we believe humans intrinsically value, right? It's a projection of childhood trauma, whereby we seek to control the chaotic nature of humanity by choosing a ruler who mirrors the values of our parents. Let me reiterate that. Most people view of human nature, right? This is the statement being made, is simply a projection of unprocessed childhood trauma. And this type of control that they're wanting is not based on logic or reason, but is merely a response to how they were raised. What follows from that is the belief that those with loving and caring parents want loving and caring rulers, or no rulers at all, and instead rule themselves through intrinsic motivation. This is the libertarian versus the anarcho-capitalist viewpoint, although in this case, kind of encapsulated as almost one of the same. On the other side of the coin, those with violent and unpredictable parents want domineering and irate rulers, or they choose to live unpredictable and violent lives with little intrinsic control over themselves. Essentially, they live unconsciously and without thought. Thought, in this case, is defined as the moment between stimuli and response. So, this idea, this story, has been at the backbone of my ethical and political framework for quite some time. You want an anarchistic society? Don't hit your kids and raise them peacefully. So the question is this true? Possibly. It's an interesting heuristic, to say the least. The difficult aspect is trying to tie this viewpoint into reality. Going from a discussion of praxeology, or how people act, and into prescription of how people should act, can be dangerous. What do I mean by that? Well, if you meet a person who wants a large government to oversee the lives of others, then according to this viewpoint, the humans who demand a large state had a bad childhood, you'll most likely treat this person as broken and of needing repair. Essentially, you need to treat them with kid gloves, condescending kid gloves. Instead of taking their viewpoints at face value, you have wrapped a narrative around this person that might just not be true. And in doing so, you end up projecting your own theories onto the person rather than meeting them where they are at, whereby you are arguing with the projection of the person that you think they are rather than the person. Now, you might not do this. Good for you. I rarely see people not. You see, this mental model pathologizes the opposition. It diagnoses them as broken. You see, your beliefs are a result of trauma rather than reason, and therefore you need to be fixed. If this is the case, it should kind of follow that, you know, people with anarchistic beliefs of non-aggression, integrity, or respect are mentally more healthy, were probably raised better, and are living better lives. Is this true? Not really. Honestly, I mean, through traveling the country for the last 4 years, working with thousands of libertarians, ranging from the Blue Ridge Liberty Project to the Free State Project to, you know, down in Acapulco, Mexico, all over the place, right? Met tons of different groups. I could tell you there is absolutely no correlation between mental health and political perspective. Now, before you begin quoting Rousseau's point that to be sane in a world of madmen is in itself madness, I want you to know that I don't mean this to be a place where I preach against the libertarian community. I certainly would not make my life the goal simply criticizing others. I know there are people, some of who've been on the show before, who spend all their time complaining about the libertarian community and calling out every single bad thing a libertarian has ever done. But personally, for me, that's not a healthy way for me to live. What I'm stating simply, though, is that categorizing political opposition as deranged or mentally ill is not beneficial. And that essentialist claims made about the nature of your opposition are probably wrong and may have never been true to begin with. There's a number of studies out there attempting to lump specific characteristics in with personality quirks with right or left political perspectives, right? On the whole, though, they're pretty flawed because the definition of these viewpoints are so radically different that it almost ends up becoming meaningless. What does it mean to be left? What does it mean to be right? Right. I understand that it's popular to lump postmodernism and Marxism into leftism, but postmodern views on identity, power, and oppression are actually antithetical to much of Marxist ideologies. Most postmodernist writers do not place the oppressed in one class and the oppressors into another, but rather discussed an ebb and flow, and in their demonstration were showing or attempting to show that the Marxist mathematical categorization of human action is actually antithetical to kind of what's going on in people's day-to-day lives, right? So when someone like Jordan Peterson, say, says this is postmodernist cultural Marxist crap, you know, leftist crap, he's basically wrapping together a bunch of contradictory concepts all together, saying that they're basically the same thing, that there's the same message being propagated, and that it is on the left, even though, I mean, there's a reason why Marxists hated postmodernism more than Jordan Peterson does. And there's a whole swath of other topics and ideas that were once popular on the right and are now popular on the left. Environmentalism is lumped into the leftist worldview, but it was actually connected with conservatism just 50 years ago. Progressivism between, you know, eugenics and border walls and restrictions on specific types of trade could be lumped in with, say, neoconservatism right now, and there would therefore would be put into the right-wing category in a lot of these psychological studies, right? Progressivism could be defined as right-wing depending on which decade and which person was talking at that particular time. I know it's popular among, you know, people in, I guess, my generation and libertarians to say right and left-wing are the same thing. But in actuality, left-wing and left-wing and right-wing aren't even the same damn thing. This is why Bernie Sanders and Trump can sound nearly identical on occasion while sounding exactly the opposite when discussing race and sex. There may be an urge at this point, right, when you start breaking down each intellectual class and showing the differences and nuances between all of them and all these complexities, to simply throw your hands up in the air and go, you know, this is too much. But I urge you to instead look at this as a learning experience. Now, going back to why I find these studies of political ideologies and brain mapping to be so dangerous, is that if you believe that, say, conservatives have lower IQs, which there are some very flawed studies that suggest this, then you can end up categorizing a whole group of people as lesser than. And if your political views justify coercive control over lesser people, which most do, then, well, you know the results if you look at the history of imperialism. Is this to say that categorization and conceptual formation is necessarily negative? No. But language by its very nature is very fluid. And to transmit information, loose interpretations of subjective reality are used and lumped together in order to create concepts. The net result of this lumping together is concept formation, and communication is the net result. The damaging aspect comes when these loose concepts are called facts, when our subjective lenses that we view the world through are called objective reality, and when rigidity and stubbornness in viewpoints are considered virtues. Yes, words matter, but only in as much as they narrowly define the subjective interpretations of reality that we are living in. The moment that specific words no longer define them, define the entities that they're supposed to, or they become too restrictive either due to their nature or due to the baggage that comes with them, say words like God or faith, they're replaced or the concept itself is thrown out. Words are merely a tool, one of many tools to transmit information. So what this all is getting down to is actually quite simple. That the assumptions that are made about others based on their political ideologies are rarely valid, as most people's political ideologies aren't even well understood by themselves. That certain political viewpoints don't inherently contain more virtuous people within them. This includes libertarians and anarchists alike. And that pathologizing others based on their ideologies not only leads to negative outcomes, but is fraught with issues. So, simply put, meet people where they're at, and do not assume that their childhood will teach you much about what they believe now. Thank you very much for listening. We're going to be unpacking a lot of those points I brought up in future episodes. I promise there will not be 11 months between then and now. And for the few listeners that are still out there, thank you so much for listening. If you like this, share the show, get more people to subscribe, and, you know, do what you do or don't. Bye-bye, everyone.